You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Doug DeFeller.
Welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug DeFeller. But before we start our show, let me just remind you that my business partner, Rick Franzi, and I co-host the Critical Mass radio shows, which air every Tuesday and Thursday at 4 p.m., all brought to you right here where you're at on octalkradio.net live. That is talk radio, so let me give you our call-in numbers, 949-713-6443. Or 949-713-6447. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. If you agree, fine. If you disagree, fine. If you want to talk about something else, well, maybe you'll get on the air and maybe you won't. But hey, call in anyhow. Our producer gets lonesome sometime. He'd love to talk to somebody. Well, look, let's talk about who our guest is today. You know, what is the current topic? Well, let me tell you, hiring is back. You know, it's been a long 3 years or maybe more, and all we've talked about is letting people go and cutting back and shortening hours and reducing pay and eliminating bonuses. And, you know, where we travel, we're pretty much hearing a different story these days. People are talking about the issues they're having with hiring. And you know what? Hiring today is a little different than it was in the post-current recession period. No matter what the statistics tell you, it's hard to find qualified people, and it is hard if you're looking for people to sort through all of those resumes you're going to get. So we've got a great guest today, Corey Bookman, who is Executive VP and COO of Western Region of Markham Search, and we're going to get the scoop from Corey on what is culture-based screening and other tips on how to select the right recruiting firm, and how to see the person, not the resume. So join me in welcoming Corey. Corey, welcome to The Coaching Perspective.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here, Doug.
Well, it's nice to have you here. You know, it's I'm always kind of holding my breath, wondering whether somebody's going to be on the other end of the line when I'm through in introducing them.
I thought about keeping you waiting for a little bit, but I let you off the hook on that one.
You didn't keep me waiting. We're in great shape. Well, look, before we get started with our topic, give us a little background on yourself. Tell us what you did before your current position, and then tell us a little bit about the company.
Sure. Southern California boy, born and raised. Got my start with a national recruiting firm called the Lucas Group. Got up to be a senior partner there, and loved the opportunity, loved learning everything that I had a chance to learn over there. But got an amazing opportunity with the Markham Group to come over here and start up their West Coast region. And, the Markham Group is certainly a very interesting, organization in the sense that they have several different verticals that all produce, kind of in harmony with one another. Ours happens to focus on doing recruiting, not only for clients of Markham, which is a international public accounting firm, and all the different clients that they have, but also for our own clients. And our own clients are just as diverse as Markham. So really small to mid-size and even large companies in any number of industries and across a number of different practice niches. So that's kind of the 100,000-foot view of what we do. Hopefully that gives you the answer to the question there.
No, I don't want answers to questions. I want dialogue.
You want dialogue.
Yes, you did give me the answer. But tell me, there's probably nobody from Markham listening, so tell me, who's the more difficult client, in-house, when you do it for your own company, or when you're dealing with people outside?
Even without people listening here from Markham, or they may be, we talked a little bit about people being here. I would say it depends on who you're working with in-house. There are certainly some very, very difficult, personalities to deal with in-house, but it really comes down to just personalities. I think that's a lot of what we'll probably talk about today, is it comes down to who you're dealing with individually and not necessarily which company they're from. And a lot of times it has to do with people's personal agendas. And we've certainly had our fair share of struggles dealing with folks internally, but we've also had some tough times dealing with folks externally as well. I would say the number one tough client to deal with is a client of Markham's, because if things end up going sideways with that, you end up having to deal with it or handle with it, you know, with kid gloves instead of, you know, being able to kind of speak exactly what's on your mind, because you don't want to lose the accounting side of the firm. You don't want to lose them a client either, right?
Boy, that's always the issue when you want to get more revenue from the same client, and you start offering them different services, and then you start worrying about, well, one of those subsidiary, so to speak, services goes bad, you lose the main revenue. That's always an issue.
Absolutely. I mean, it's difficult anytime you're dealing with somebody else's clients. You know, you want to be able to treat them with respect. You want to be able to treat them with, you know, the dignity that they deserve and offer them the kind of service I think that we're known for offering. But at the same time, a big part of our service is being consultative. And it's not just going out there and finding a resume and emailing it to someone. It's giving advice. And, you know, just today I recommended to one of my clients that they pull two people out of the process. And you have to be able to give that kind of very firm, very strong feedback to somebody if they're going to be, you know, they're going to be trusting you going forward. And when you're dealing with somebody else's clients, if they're not necessarily receptive to that kind of feedback, it can generate a boundary between the two sides, and that makes it very tough to be able to do the job.
You know, I kind of started out the show with a statement, and I'm going to ask you whether you really agree with it or not. I made the claim that hiring today is much different than it was sort of pre-recession time. You think that's a true statement or not?
Far be it for me to argue with you. You know, it's your show. I'm here to make you look good, right? No, I think it's back. I think it's back. I don't know that I want to go ahead and say that it's back full. You know, it's back to exactly where it was a number of years ago. But I think it's come back, and I think it's come back in a big way. You know, the big thing now is that it is different. It is different than it was a number of years ago in a number of different ways. Everything from how many candidates people are seeing, the length of the process, what they're willing to offer those candidates, how they go about finding them to begin with. And then there's an interesting dynamic between the folks that are looking to do the hiring and the folks that are looking to be hired. I think the last few years have developed a little bit of an icy barrier between the two sides to some extent, and people are rightfully so very cautious, you know, rightfully so exploring all their options, and they're making sure that they're not going to get burned. So the dynamic has really shifted, and, you know, a lot of the hiring that we saw, you know, before the recession, where people would really, you know, look, if you're a warm body and you can type on a computer, you're kind of coming to work. I think it's changed. You know, I don't know that I want to say 180 degrees in a different direction, but certainly it's changed. And I think that affects just about everybody from recruiting folks to HR to the CEO and really on down. And it certainly has developed a different dynamic that we're seeing out there in the market.
You know, you mentioned the more conservative attitude, wanting to check the options, being a little more nervous. Are you talking about the candidate, or are you talking about the company looking to fill the position? Who's more concerned these days?
Sure, I think both are concerned, but I think, you know, my reference is probably more to the company. And if I slip on the show, I might call them the client. But if I say the client, you'll know that I'm meaning the company. The company, I think, is really the one who is being a little bit more overly cautious these days. And it's not good, bad, or indifferent. It's just what they want to do, and it's all personal opinion. But, you know, that has generated some issues. And while companies want to be very cautious, they want to make sure that they vet all their options. They want to make sure that they're exploring all the different avenues that they can. What happens from that a lot of times is that a company will take so long vetting their options that number one, number two, and number three choice that they saw in the first couple weeks, those folks have now gone to other jobs because the hiring is picking up. And I think the employer's minds oftentimes are stuck about 12 to 18 months ago right now, and they're thinking, well, these guys are going to be on the market no matter what. If I wrap this hiring process up in 2 or 3 months, they're still going to be here. Well, unfortunately, guess what? There's a lot of other companies that are doing hiring right now, too, and some of them are jumping on top of these A-plus candidates, and they're bringing them on board a heck of a lot more swiftly than others. And what that leads to is they get to the end of their process, their top three choices are now gone. They're not satisfied with any of the other folks that they've seen to be able to bring them on board in the position, and now they start back again at square one. And that is definitely one of the biggest things that we see from our clients is the reticence to be able to pull the trigger ends up putting them in a position where they miss out on who they really did truly like the most.
Now, could I extrapolate from that and say that this means it's a candidate's market, that they have more choices or more control over the process?
You know, extrapolate away. Again, it's your show. I always cringe when I hear somebody say it's a candidate's market or it's an employer's market, because I think it means, and pardon the turn of phrase, I think it means that one side is kind of able to dump all over the other side. And I don't think that that's fair. I think when you look at it, and how we look at hiring and how we look at employment, is it's a relationship, you know. And this isn't a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, we're trying to slam something together here, and then two sides don't see each other from there on out. We're developing a relationship that two sides are going to hope to join together and work with each other for many, many years to come. And hopefully it's the last job that this person over has and the last person that the company ever has to hire for this role. So when we look at, and I hear that term, it's a candidate's market, it's an employer's market, it makes me cringe, because I feel like one side can really take advantage over the other side. What I will tell you, though, is that there are some more options that candidates are seeing these days. They do have a little bit more leverage to kind of start to talk about, do I want to ask for more money? Do I want to ask for better terms? Do I want to ask for more vacation, or, you know, whatever the niceties are that come along with a deal? But on the same token, that really has to be tempered by the fact that employers are still seeing a lot of candidates. They're still seeing a lot of people out there in the market that are willing to look for a job. The difference between right now and several years ago when the hiring was hot is that they're not seeing as many good candidates today as they were seeing before the recession. That's the big difference. But they are still seeing a lot of people. They're just not as high of quality. So are candidates seeing more options? Absolutely. Are those options always great? I sure don't think so. But I think that, you know, the amount of options that they're seeing is being tempered back by the fact that the employers are still seeing a lot of options on their end too. And so it's not, I don't know that one side has so much leverage over the other, if that kind of makes sense on that end.
Yeah, no, it does. And so what I'm hearing you say is it's sort of a balanced market, but at the same time that while it's balanced, that there is a surplus, so to speak, of a huge number of candidates when a job's posted, so to speak, but that the quality of qualified applicants is not as great as it has been. Is that correct?
I think that would be correct. Yeah, we see, you know, and that you talked about it in the very, very start of the show, and you said that, sorting through all those numbers of resumes, right? And that's a big part of our job is I hate to say we're sorting through resumes, but we're sorting through folks, and we're talking to a lot of different people, and not all those people are we looking at with resumes, but we do a lot of our, on our side, we happen to do a lot of our recruiting as direct recruiting, which is, if everybody uses different phrases, when we say direct recruiting, we happen to mean that we're contacting the candidates directly. We often don't have a resume from them from minute one. We're cold calling into the place of business or at home on a cell phone or what have you, and talking to them about an opportunity that's out there in the market, and then extrapolating leads and contacts and referrals from them. So, I think that what you said is right, but, the quality of candidate is not quite as high. You do have to sort through a lot of them, but there are some really good people out there right now that have been, I'm trying to think of the best term, but really lying in wait. I think that they've been underpaid, overworked, underappreciated, underutilized to what they should be doing for a number of years now, and they've been waiting for the market to get better. And now that the market's better, they're in a position now where they're saying, look, you've been underpaying me. You cut my pay 25% 2 years ago to get through this recession. Now they're not willing to bump it back up to where it is before. I'm excited to go see what other opportunities are out there where someone is really going to appreciate me for what I'm giving out of my life and out of my heart and soul to the company. And those are the best candidates that we're seeing these days. Now, unfortunately, to every one of those candidates, we're probably seeing three or four folks who have been job hoppers over the last 5 to 7 years. And if, you know, the last 7 years, they've had four jobs. That's where companies are really, really getting conservative these days, is they don't want to take a chance investing into somebody who might only be there for another 12 to 18 months and then is going to hop on over to somebody else. So that's the surplus of the candidates that we're seeing right now. A lot of job hoppers, a lot of people who are looking to take even whatever small bump they possibly can get in their pay to just jump across town and take the next job. But we are finding some really good folks right now in the market who have been waiting for it to heat up, waiting for the ice to cool, and for them to go back into the market and get really what it is that they deserve.
So I would say that what I'm gathering from that is that what we're seeing that is kind of new to the market here in recent years is we're finding people that are currently employed that are now looking for a better position.
Well, you know, I would correct that only by saying that I think that we've always found people that have been currently employed. That's something I've certainly seen for a long time. But I think that the amount of people that we're seeing that are just fed up with the current situation is increasing. You know, we've always seen people that are currently employed, and I think that that's how the best recruiters are going to make a living, is they find people that are passive candidates, as they're kind of referred to in the market, people who are employed, they're good at what they do, their company has used them and appreciated them for many, many years, but they want to go into a bigger opportunity or something that's a little bit more tailor-made for their personal lifestyle or culture or whatever it is. They want a more boutique shop, something closer to home, what have you. It had to be a better opportunity. What's different is not so much that they're employed today. What's different is that a lot of the folks that we're talking to all of a sudden we find a very common thread throughout it, which is that they've been overworked, underpaid, underappreciated, and they don't feel happy going to work anymore. And that is a result from a lot of these companies trying to say, we're trying to cut money because we're scared at what could potentially happen. So we're going to let go 3, 4, 5 people and consolidate 5 or 6 different people's jobs within 2 folks, but pay them the same or even pay them less and know that they're lucky to have a job right now. But that's changed because there are more jobs now and salaries are going back up a little bit. And those folks who are underappreciated, overworked, underpaid, those are the ones that we're really seeing a lot of these days saying, Corey, I'm going to go out and take another stab on the market right now. I want to see what else is out there.
Okay,
so
good.
That's where I think the
dynamic changed. Corey, I'm going to interrupt you for just a minute. Let's go to commercial, and then we'll be right back with you.
Sounds good.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
If you are a Southern California business owner or executive, this message is for you. For over 17 years, Doug Gaffella has been coaching executives, helping them create and improve the effectiveness of teams and individual team members. What makes Doug's approach unique and successful is his fundamental approach. Doug looks at the coaching from the perspective of the client, not the coach. Doug has helped hundreds of companies and led over 1,000 planning meetings that have changed lives and the course of many successful firms throughout Southern California. If you're interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn about our executive coaching and team development. Critical Mass for Business is a professional executive coaching and team development company and is the fastest growing business advisory firm in Orange County.
Okay, and we're back with our guest today, Corey Bookman, Executive VP and COO of the Western Region of Markham Search. And Corey's been giving us a rundown of what some of the things that are different in the marketplace today. Corey, let's just shift gears for a minute here. You know, if I'm in an HR department today and I'm looking to go outside and get some help, what should I be looking at in a recruiting firm? You know, how does one differ from the other?
Great question, and I heard your question in full. And, you know, what I would say is that what you're looking for in a recruiting firm is the same thing that you'd be looking for in any partner, any friend, anything. You want somebody that you can trust and that you know is going to work closely with you and that understands what it is that your company is looking for. And I think that there's a delicate balance, and I kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier. On one side, you want somebody who really understands your company and understands the culture there, understands the people that walk throughout the halls, understands, you know, what you guys do for casual Fridays or, you know, what kind of service organizations the company is a part of, and takes an active interest in understanding the type of people that work there. On the other hand, you want somebody, I think, who politely and respectfully, of course, is going to be able to disagree with you and help you see that there are times that there are people that bring great skills to the table and they just don't have them listed on their resume. And I think we talked a little bit about that, you know, when you and I first talked, which is seeing past somebody's resume and seeing the actual person, seeing who they are, what they do, what they bring to the table. Sometimes it's impossible to do that. You know, I'll give you a for example. I had I have a client, actually my best client, and one of the managing partners at my best client ended up interviewing somebody through me who on paper looked fantastic. I thought she was going to do great and get the job. She goes in there, meets with them, and a 90-minute meeting ends up being 3.5 hours. Well, something I never could have known without asking is that she happens to do work with disabled children. She happens to volunteer her time for disabled children, and the managing partner has one of his kids is you know, has some disabilities. I never would have known that, but it's something that is just not on the paper. You have to see past the paper, and they ended up getting along so well that they talked for those 3.5 hours. So what, you know, how I describe that is you want somebody who is going to be able to kind of challenge you in a polite, respectful way and say, I think you may be missing something that isn't on the page. And that's hard to do. There are a lot of recruiters out there right now, and there have been a lot of recruiters out there, who are very content to do the quick wham-bam placement, take the fee, and get the heck out of town. They may say that they're going to offer a replacement. They may even say that they're going to offer a refund. And when it comes time to get that replacement or refund, they're really nowhere to be found. You want somebody who's a little bit more long-sighted. And I hate to say this because this goes against, you know, if my boss could hear me, he'd be cringing. But I think the model is going towards a couple areas. It's going towards lower fees because accessibility to candidates is getting easier and easier. There are more and more sources out there to help, you know, in that process. So it's going towards lower fees. It's going towards a more consultative approach. So it's going towards people who are willing to go out there, put on a suit and tie, go out there, meet people face-to-face, shake their hands, get an understanding of what their environment is all about. And if your recruiter is unwilling to do that, then you're not a high enough priority on their list and you shouldn't want to work with them. And it's also going to somebody who is more long-sighted, meaning that they're okay losing a deal today for two deals tomorrow. They're okay losing two deals today for 10 deals over the next year and a half or 2 years. And if you're not long-sighted, if you're not patient, if they're not willing to come out and visit with you individually, if they're not willing to be hands-on, then you're not a priority to them, and you're sure as heck not going to be a priority to them when it comes time for them to pay you back money or to work for you for free because their candidate fell off. So I think that there are some, again, and this goes over and over and over to cultural things, right? It's not necessarily the biggest firm or the most flashy firm or the firm that has the most money behind them or any of those things. It comes to having a real solid working relationship with somebody that you know you can trust.
I'm glad you mentioned the culture part of it because that was one of the things that really grabbed me when you used the term, when you and I talked about culture-based screening, not to mean it's ethnic-based, but culture-based in terms of identifying a fit. You know, I've often heard the term, we hire for skill and we fire for attitude, meaning we're really good at interviewing people and finding out whether they've got the skill. Can they run the computer or the machines? But we don't do a good job of interviewing for whether they're going to be a good fit. And that's where it always goes wrong. And what I hear you talking about is the importance, the role that you play in helping the client identify the fit with the candidate and the candidate identifying the fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'll tell you, you kind of touched on this. In terms of helping them find the fit, we spend a lot of our time teaching our clients how to interview. You know, let's face it, if you're a CFO, if you're a VP of marketing, if you're a director of sales, your job isn't to interview. Your job is to do sales or finance or marketing or whatever it is, you know, or it could be anything, right? But your job is not to be a professional interviewer. It doesn't mean that you're not good at it, but there are a lot of times that in that example I just gave you, two people will find a common ground to all of a sudden start talking about. And they'll get off the course, and they have 60 minutes allotted for their time to interview. They'll spend 45 minutes talking about it, 15 minutes talking about the role, and in a week when they go to review that person, they say, well, we didn't feel that they were strong enough skill-wise, or we didn't feel that they were, you know, a fit in XYZ area. Well, a lot of that is because the interview got sidetracked, and it's important for the recruiter to understand everything that really happened, and for the HR folks to really understand everything that happened to make sure that the people that are doing the interviewing are staying on track. And that sure is a tough part of it. But you're right. A lot of it that we do is cultural screening. It's to make sure. And you know, another thing I was going to say is that you mentioned that they'll hire for skill and fire for personality. Is that what you said?
Yeah, fire for attitude, same thing.
Fire for attitude. And what I will tell you is I think today that's probably, you know, reversed to some extent. I think that people are hiring more and more and more for culture, more and more for personality than ever before. You know, that goes a long way with a lot of the folks that are out there in the market. Some of the newer, you know, early to mid-20s, that's where it's developing an issue because a lot of their cultures and a lot of their personalities is those younger folks, and I'm a younger person as well myself, but a lot of those younger folks will feel entitled. They feel that even though they have 2-3 years of experience, they feel entitled to a certain amount of pay. They want their own office. They want an expense account. They want all these things, whereas people who have been working for 20 or 30 years, they had to work for those things. They had to earn them. And so a lot of that type of culture comes through in the interview process as well. But I would say that more than ever, if they hired for skill in the past, it's probably, I would say, maybe 60-65% hiring for personality and culture these days. That's what I see, at least.
Okay, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that. But, you know, I did have the occasion recently to listen to Zappos's method of hiring, and they talk about the fact that the sort of the line manager, the department head, the manager that's going to supervise this employee, that they interview the person to see if they've got the skill set and fit the job. And once they find a candidate they're satisfied with, it, then the candidate's off to HR, where HR determines whether the person's going to fit the company's culture. And I thought that was a real interesting kind of twist on today's dialogue, but of course Zappos is all about their culture. So
I agree, but you know what's interesting about that, and I would almost challenge this, is that, you know, and there's so much there's so much difference in I guess human flaw involved in the process, that I think HR and the hiring manager, whether it be for Zappos or any other company, should be working a heck of a lot more hand in hand. Because if the person who's actually going to be doing the job, or the hiring manager per se, is interviewing this guy for skill, and they pass on all the skill, and then they go over to HR, and HR signs off on them for all of the personality stuff, who's to say that that person, while they may get along great with HR, may not be a cultural or personality fit at all with the hiring manager or the other internal customers within the company? And I would think that they would want HR to not only test for culture but skill as well, but then also the hiring manager to be really looking at them for culture too and thinking, is this somebody that I can work with? Is this somebody that I can really rely on? I think for them to separate it so you know, black and white, that sounds like a big departure from anything I would ever recommend to my clients. Now, far be it for me to ever tell another company how to go about, you know, do their hiring, especially somebody like Zappos. But what I would say is that I would always encourage any of my clients to ensure that the person's going to get along real well with everybody that they're going to be working with internally, not just HR. HR is a huge component of it, and I think that they're going to make sure that there's a kind of a congruent fit within the company, right? That you have the same types of people that are going to work in finance as in, you know, sales and marketing and HR and all the other divisions, that you have a certain type of, you know, cultural fit within the company. There's an ideal that's held to it. But at the same time, I sure would think that it would be real important to the company to ensure that that individual has the right personality and cultural fit to fit within the fit within that specific department.
I like what you're saying. You know, you're talking about putting more responsibility on the hiring people to really learn how to interview. And you know, that's what's so tough in the market today. As you mentioned earlier, you know, we're looking at managers that their job isn't hiring people. They happen to end up having to hire somebody, but that's not their native skill set.
Yep.
And that's where I find or would assume that an outside firm like yours plays so much of the role, not in making the decision, but in helping the process. Would that be fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And what I would say in the kind of very cheesy line that I give all of my clients is, it's not my job and it's not my firm's job to make you a hire. It's not our job to get you somebody to hire. It's our job to provide you with enough good information for you to make an intelligent decision for yourself about who you're going to hire. You know, and it's not their native skill. It's not their native, you know, tongue to be able to go out there and know the exact questions to ask. And sometimes they'll go in there with a list of 20 questions on a piece of paper and run through them. And then they kind of go out and they think, well, I guess they answered most of them correctly. But the reality is I find the most successful companies are the ones that take a lot of pride in hiring the right people for the job, not just getting through the hiring process, but being involved with the hiring process. And I think that that often starts with having the highest level people involved from a very early stage. A lot of times what we'll see companies do is they'll pass the hiring off to a lower level person for the first two or three stages, and or even longer, and then eventually at the very last stage the higher level person gets involved, as opposed to some of the more successful companies that I deal with. And I'll tell you one in particular I'm dealing with right now. They're looking for a CFO. The first person that the CFO is meeting with is the CEO. That's the very first person that he's meeting with, and the CEO takes such pride and such I think pleasure in being able to mold and shape his company that he is the first person to set eyes and talk to this person who's coming in, guy or girl. And I see that as being a common trend within some of the more successful companies that I deal with. The high-level executives will get involved from an early stage instead of passing that responsibility on to somebody else because they're too busy or not interested enough or it's not a priority for them.
I like the sounds of that, but it seems that probably works where I'm using an outside firm like yours to do some of my preliminary screening.
Without a doubt.
But in a firm where I'm not, then, you know, you don't want the CEO meeting with every single candidate that hasn't
Without
been
a doubt.
Screened out.
Without, and let's be clear. You know, I think that there's two things. First of all, you know, if you're hiring a person in the mailroom, you know, does it make sense for the CEO to meet with them first? No, right? So the things have to be tempered. Now, whoever heads up the mailroom, maybe it would make sense for them to meet with them first. But I think that that is coupled with exactly what you said. You need to have a trusted partner, somebody that you know is going to deliver you three really good candidates instead of 20 mediocre ones. And the person who's going to take the time to go through the other 17 that aren't great and say, you know what, this isn't worth my client's time. This isn't worth their time. I'm going to go through and really screen based not only on what they've shown me on a piece of paper, you know, with a job description, not only what I've, you know, gathered from their cultural and personality fit within the organization, but also from all the things in between the lines that I've gathered from them over the course of having them as a client or meeting with them face-to-face or whatever it is. I'm going to screen on as many different levels as possible so that when I submit somebody to them, I say, I guarantee you're going to like this person. And even if it's not the right person for the job, you're going to walk out of the meeting saying, that was a worthwhile candidate. That was a worthwhile meeting. And that's something, that's a level of trust you have to have from your vendor. You have to have from your recruiter in order to go through that style of hiring. Otherwise, you're right. Do you want to have the CEO meeting every Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes through the door? Absolutely not. It would be a complete waste of their time, and the company wouldn't run very efficiently, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Corey, if I'm going to hire you, let's assume we've not been, we don't have a long-term relationship. What is it that I need to give you so that you can do the best screening job for me? What should I be doing as the HR department or the manager that's looking to fill a position?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple different things. I think, first of all, you got to grant the recruiter access to the hiring manager. You can run the process through HR. You can submit all resumes through HR. You can do that. That's fine if that's what your process is. I know HR is very wanting to have the resumes sent to them, and I understand that. But I think that if you want to have your recruiter do a real good job for you, at the upfront part, the beginning part of the engagement, you want to grant the recruiter some access to the higher level executives to see what their expectations are. And the recruiter needs to be savvy enough to ask some really smart questions to get a really full understanding of exactly what that client is looking for. What kind of people do they like to hire? What are their expectations? Where have they not been met before? Where have those expectations not been met before? What kind of problems have they had with other recruiters? And what kind of problems have they had with candidates? You know, who succeeded? Who hasn't succeeded? And there's a ton of other questions that the smart recruiter has to be able to go in there and ask them. Second of all, that recruiter also has to get those same expectations and those same questions asked from the HR professional. How do they want to work? What's worked for them in the past? How do they, how do they see going forward working real successfully with the recruiter? A combination of those questions between the hiring managers and the HR, if you grant them that kind of transparency and that kind of access, I think you set yourself up for a good relationship and some successful results. Where I see it running into problems is I see that there are times that HR wants to set up a huge roadblock and really not grant any other transparency or access to the recruiter at all throughout the organization. All the questions, every single tidbit has to be gotten through HR, and you really don't have an idea of how the rest of the organization runs except through HR. Now, I'll go back to that. I talked about a client a while ago that I said is my best client, and they are absolutely my best client, have been my best client for years and years. I do 110% of my business directly with HR. But there are times that I pick up the phone and call the hiring managers directly just to catch up, to network, touch base with them, see how their holidays are going, whatever it is, because I want to get an understanding of how their organization is running. How are they doing? What kind of problems are they running into? You know, how's the culture evolving over there? And in that way, I stay really in tune with them to the point that I know the exact type of person to present to them today is not the exact type of person I would have presented to them 5 years ago. And so what it really comes down to is granting transparency and access throughout the organization and understanding that a good recruiter is here to try to set up, I think, policies and procedures to help the company, to help guide that company to getting really good people and not to try to circumvent HR. Now, there are recruiters out there that will absolutely try to circumvent HR, and that's a completely different situation. But I think that setting up a real beneficial relationship is going to stem from being able to have both sides trust one another, being able to grant access and transparency on both sides. That means if the HR professional or the hiring managers have some tough questions that they need to ask from the recruiter, meaning they want references of good clients that they've worked with, they want examples of positions that they've placed, they want, you know, they have other tough questions, well, then the recruiter needs to be willing to ask, to answer those as well, right? But I think it's an issue of being able to grant transparency and access on both sides of the table.
Great. I like it. Thank you very much for that explanation. You know, you mentioned a phrase when you and I talked the other day that I wrote down that really kind of made me chuckle, and I don't know that I got it exactly right, but you can correct me here. You said one of the things that's important is putting together the job description, but a job description, not the Ten Commandments.
I would agree.
That with the audience. I thought that was really, really good. Having spent untold hours with people putting together job descriptions that I saw absolutely no value in, that one really kind of hit home with me.
Well, Well, what can I say? I'm a funny guy. Just ask me. You know, it's a great point. And, you know, the Ten Commandments kind of view of how someone's putting together a job description can really be detrimental. And again, this is kind of a couple things that we've talked about before here, which is culture-based screening as well as reading between the lines. There's a couple different issues here. The first is whoever is putting together the job description has to be working hand-in-hand and allow the verbiage to really flow from the department who is hiring for this job, all right? So if they're hiring for a CFO, then this verbiage needs to come from the finance department. If they're hiring for a marketing professional, then this needs to come from the head of marketing. And the HR person should be working hand-in-hand with them. The HR person is always going to have just absolutely invaluable knowledge that a lot of other people in the organization just will never, ever have. And that's why a lot of them are paid the big bucks, you know. And so it's important for both sides to be able to work together on that. So that's the first part. The first part is that it absolutely should be a joint effort, both sides putting in 50%. You know, you have 50-50 from HR and whatever department is hiring, and that the job description reflects the actual needs of the organization and the department, more specifically, that's hiring. The Ten Commandments part of it is that a lot of times in job descriptions, what you'll see is something along the lines of, and this is just a great example of this, something that says, we're looking for somebody that has 7 to 10 years of experience. That's great. That's a great starting point. There may be somebody that has 8.5 years of experience that's just right in the middle of that, the meaty part of the curve, that is not as good of a candidate as somebody who has 12 years of experience or somebody who has 6 years of experience. And I think it's important to look at the type of experience and the type of background that this person is coming from. If they have, if you're looking for a manager who has 7 to 10 years of experience, you might have a manager out of a big company who's had a ton of responsibility thrust on them at a very early age that with 6 years of experience might beat out somebody who has 10 years of experience just because they've had so much more responsibility thrust on them at an early age. As a, for example, and not to toot my own horn here, but at 26, I was a senior partner within Lucas Group. Now, if I didn't tell you how old I was, and I just told you I was a senior partner, you would probably assume that I'm mid to late 30s, if not 40s. The truth is that I could do the job of a senior partner at just about any other firm here in the country. But just because I was 26, there were probably not a lot of opportunities out there where someone was going to say, sure, we'll give a 26-year-old kid a chance to manage an organization. That would be a pretty tough sell. What I mean is you want to be able to see past how many years someone's working or what specific college sometimes they went to, and you want to look at what exact experience they've really had. Another one that I think is crazy, and this could just be my own thing, is I still get companies that want to know someone's GPA from 7 to 10 years ago, and it blows me away. The guy could have gone to Harvard, but if he got a 2.8 at Harvard, even though he's been working at some Fortune 100 company for the last 10 years, they may not want to talk to him because in the description it says that they have to have a 3.3 or better. And it's that kind of thing where I think that there are a lot of companies that miss out on really good people just because for one reason or another their resume doesn't match the exact Ten Commandments of the job description. And it's being able to see past that. It doesn't mean that we need to take every person who's coming, you know, to apply for the job, but it means that we should be able to consider A-plus candidates who have a great background and great experience, even though their resume doesn't exactly match that job description. And at the same time, this is where you really need a good partner and a good recruiter to pair up with to know that they're not going to waste your time talking to somebody who, okay, they're outside of the job description and they're really not good for this role. You need to be able to trust your partner to be able to say, and this is one of the parts that, you know, just going back full circle to what I talked to earlier, you need to have somebody who you can trust to challenge you when it's appropriate to challenge you. Not to challenge you when it's not appropriate, not to challenge you when somebody really doesn't make sense and they're just trying to cram a fee down your throat, but to challenge you in the honest-to-goodness hopes that I really think this person could benefit your organization. Let's take another look, and why don't we really analyze it from a different direction?
As we kind of wrap up here, is there anything else about you or your firm that we haven't talked about or something that I interrupted you on that you want to cover before we kind of wrap this up?
Oh, man, how long is the show? I mean, we have another 2-3 hours. I could sit here and talk about myself all day.
And you might be by yourself, too.
I'm sorry?
And you might be by yourself with another 2 or 3 hours.
There will be crickets in the background. So, what I would say is this. If there are any professionals out there that are, HR professionals, hiring professionals, you've been frustrated with the folks that you've used in the past, I'd welcome you to give us a call. We welcome all conversations. We meet with a lot of companies face-to-face. Let us come out there and buy you lunch, and we'll talk to you about our approach to things. For some companies, it works. I will tell you that we don't just take every single job order that's out there in the market. We like to make sure that it's something that we know we can fill. We know we're going to have a high success ratio at filling, and we know we're going to be able to provide great candidates for that company. We're not in the business of just taking a job order just to have a job order. But we are in the business of developing some really good, long-lasting relationships, and I think that's what has made our professionals so successful. So on one side, if you're a hiring professional of any kind of company and you're looking for folks in accounting and finance or tech or sales or marketing or what have you, we do a number of different verticals across the board. And if you've been frustrated with what you've seen out there in the market and you want somebody and you want an organization who's going to look at it from a very different point of view, we'd welcome the conversation. Even if nothing comes out of it and we're not working together tomorrow just yet, I think it always makes sense to know some good recruiters out there in the market just in case your options fall through and you have somebody real reliable to fall back on. On the other side of that, I would say that if there are recruiters out there that are listening to the show and they're looking for a very different approach and a very different type of recruiting, I'd always welcome conversation, especially here in Southern California. We've got an office in Irvine. We have an office here in L.A. And, I talk to a good handful of recruiters every single day about the opportunities that we have over here. And, the point of both sides of that is that I'm always real happy to have a conversation with the folks that are out there in the market. And, if anyone is curious as to the Markham approach, I would absolutely welcome them to set up a call with us. Shoot me an email, and we'll find time to either chat on the phone or even meet up face-to-face.
Great. Corey, why don't you give us the website, email, or phone number, whatever, so that we do know how to get a hold of you.
Absolutely. I'll do a couple of those here. The website is www.markhamsearch.com, and that's M as in Mary, A-R-C-U-M as in Mary, the word search, .com. And my direct dial here is 310-432-7428. 310-432-7428. And my email address finally is corey.bookman@markhamsearch.com. And it's corey.bookman@markhamsearch.com. And again, I welcome any kind of conversation of any networking. We do a ton of networking here. And even if we're not the right people to work with somebody, we generally know who to plug them in with. And I think the market works a heck of a lot better when we're able to network with one another and put people in touch with the right folks out there in the market.
Corey, thank you very much for being with us today. And welcome to the Critical Mass business community. And we hope to talk to you again soon.
Absolutely.
Have a nice evening.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
So we've been listening to Corey Bookman, COO and Executive VP at Markham Search, and talking about the issues in recruiting employees today, and I hope that was informative. It certainly was for me, and of course, he's open to more contact and more information, and he gave you all of that. So I hope you've enjoyed our show today and that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can use to make better, more informed business decisions. Have a good evening.
You've been listening to Critical Mass from the Coaching Perspective, only on OCTalkRadio.net.